Hello, this is Susan Smith Nash, and this is the audio accompaniment to my presentation for New Media Consortium and the Spring Symposium on Mashups. So, the title of my presentation is Educational Uses of Mashups. So, let's start here. If you see page one, you'll see the idea of the faithful corgi running around, being the assistant, and a couple of people walking around, mashing together types of things. So the idea through this collage, is to give a sense of what mashups are all about, which I could say that you can say conceptually that they are collages, and they are kind of funnels or sifting or parsing data mining tools. Here's a page about myself, so I won't go into it. You can read and enjoy anyway. So let's go on. Let's talk about the educational uses of mashups. The first use, let's just go ahead and just say that this is for a course that's on a specific topic that perhaps is not really the easiest in the world to at least get under the skin of. Let's say that it's easy to memorize the numbers or sort of remember categories, but students have a hard time really making the connection between the data sources and lives. So if you use a mashup, the mashups, by combining and making collage, by sifting, by data mining these different types and sources of information, you can use those to enhance the instructional content of your course. Now, the second reason and use of a mashup is like so interesting because it allows you to engage with the material on a deeper level. And finally, again, you can explore and uncover previously unsuspected aspects of the data. So it forces the student and the instructor to say, okay, what is this data really about and what's really going on with it? Let's look at the way that it is turning, and then also there are new worlds, how it turns up new ways of looking at things, and then there are new worlds through ways of seeing familiar things. So you look at the familiar, you mash it with some other information, you're going, oh, I never thought of that about this thing. So let's say population, for example, then you look at the number of people in poverty. Yeah, wow, never noticed this pattern before. Now, if you have a mashup and you start seeing different patterns that you never saw before, this gives you a chance to discuss and debate and share your insights with other people in the class. So the learners are able to develop a lot of analytical skills, but a lot of skills in debating and discussing. And then finally, they can enhance their computer skills. But, okay, word of caution, it's really important to not have to be the point where the educational use is intimidating so that students are afraid to engage because they feel perhaps unable to do the things that they're supposed to do, the coding or creating the pipe, the Yahoo pipe or whatever. So we're focusing on all different types and ranges of mashups. So here's a little poll, just look it over. Are you in higher ed, K-12, corporate training, not-for-profit, infrastructure, service provider? Are you a textbook or instructional materials provider? How does a mashup enhance learning? It engages the students in deeper learning. It asks students to classify and organize knowledge, connects real-world situations, encourages collaboration, creates ideal conditions for learning, engages learner, sparks the interest, and then finally it causes the students to learn by doing. So let's think about it. In your opinion, in your experience, what's the hardest thing to do? Is it hardest to get students to make connections between instructional content and the learning outcome? Is it hard to get them to overcome their fear of technology and the unknown? Or is it hard to get them to truly interact with each other in discussion forums? Mashups can help on all of those. But let's see, how can we really use them in education? Let's take this by steps. Because mashups can be a great distractor, or they can actually lead a person down the beautiful path of irrelevancy. It's easy to do. And then you could end up with nothing, because except maybe some interesting insights. But to focus the knowledge and the understanding is a really good thing. So let's look at mashups. Define the learning goal. What do you want the data to tell you? Step two, step back, identify sources of data. Step three, determine if the data can be mined at all. What kind of data is it? Can you mine it, or what is it there to do? If these are images, that's a different kind of data than, say, news stories or tables of numbers. Discuss what the relationships of the data fields can reveal. And finally, identify pitfalls and problems with the assumptions. Mashups in cognition. Mashups require you to get skill in classifying knowledge. They help you develop working memory, make connections, and encourage you to experience things. And also, they encourage emotional connections. Let's look at cultural things, cultural considerations in using mashups. Mashups can be fraught with pitfalls if we're not careful, because we have to be aware of potential bias in the way that databases are combined, and that could be inflected or mediated by culture. I mean, which biases are you selecting, or which databases are you selecting, and why are some databases considered better than others? That really makes a difference, and so it's there are a lot of cultural, perhaps some cultural considerations. And when I mean culture, I don't mean necessarily nationality, but I'm talking about organizational culture, etc. So one way to be aware of cultural considerations, or to have considerations, is to be aware of underlying assumptions used in selecting and in the databases themselves. So although you probably can't really get into the research design of that was used in constructing a database, you can at least find that assume that there are some underlying beliefs or things that were used to inform the study. Now, another thing too, if you're looking at articles, or also you're pulling in media or cultural images, culturally inflected images, remember that there can be a lot of spin in the articles. And I mean, everything has its political element. And I don't mean, you know, national presidential, obviously, but I mean the body politic. Everything has its grammar, the rules for operation. I'm thinking a little bit about Derrida here, and post-structuralist thought. It's extremely useful to step back and sort of interrogate the data, interrogate the value judgments that are or were used, and also the underlying assumptions about what is and what is not valid. So these kind of epistemological assumptions, etc. So again, there are ways of sharing data and information, and that can vary from culture to culture. Gamer boomer ramp-ups. Digital natives have different comfort zones with technology. Boomers have learned to learn by creating classification schemes. So when I mean gamer, I'm talking about digital natives, or people that were born in a time where they are comfortable with video games and with the digital processes. And I'd like to mention right now, there's an interesting book, The Kids Are All Right, How the Gamer Generation is Changing the Workplace. It's John Seebeck and Mitchell Wade. Another consideration about this difference is that their boomer generation that predate the advent of video games and mobile technologies, etc., that the learning styles are quite different. So digital natives or gamers are comfortable with the hands-on, needing information at one's fingertips, purposeful exploration, clicking around, etc. Now, boomers, in theory, I mean, it's been supported by quite a few studies, boomers' learning preferences have to do with more linear types of approaches. So it's a lot more about sequential learning and also about classification schemes. So to, in certain ways, mashups, and if you have teams, mashups sort of, you can mash up the generations as well. So you can have teams, team learning, problem solving, using each other's strengths. Okay, here's a poll. Have you created a feed on a service that filters the results based on a tag that you have selected? Yes or no? So what kinds of mashups work best in education, from simple to complex? Use iGoogle to blend together applications on a single page. Google Scholar, Google Earth, look at current configurations of the RLC, and look at what happens historically, Google Scholar. So here's just a simple way to bring together things on iGoogle using different blocks and different spaces in the iGoogle space. So you're not actually filtering something through the other thing, you're displaying them side by side. So that's sometimes easiest for students, and it's better. Okay. Use Bebo to pull feeds tagged with Westminster Kennel Club along with Beagle with Flickr images tagged Beagle. So what would that yield? So if you use that, what will it yield? Stories about Uno, who won the Westminster Kennel Club Best of Show this year? Let's see. That was some typos in there, kind of embarrassing. I hope I can fix this before the thing tomorrow. Bebo is easy to use. Built-in spaces to place your apps. Bebo.com. Maybe they pronounce it Vevo. I don't know, but I like Bebo. Bebo is a great place to experiment with apps and share. One thing that makes it easy is they have a little pull-down menu of applications, and then the space. We'll go back to this first page, where it says Susan Q Beyond Utopia. You can see that it's very easy and friendly. Now the list of applications is grouped and it's always expanding. And then if you scroll down, it's very similar to say Facebook or MySpace. And it has a place where you can put widgets and you can embed code. So I put Flickr and YouTube stuff. So it's not bad. So let's look at another. So Bebo is a great, it's a space. It's like a mashup space, and it's a good place to share. Another thing that students can do is they can use an existing mashup and create their own using the existing mashups, and then they can share it with other students. So let's look at Virtual Tourist, building a walking tour for fellow students. Now, I kind of wanted to push the limits to see what I could do with this, so I created a schmaplet on using the map of Oklahoma City, and I mashed it together with images and information about Oklahoma City, but the oil industry. So I wanted to see if I could actually transcend the map and do things that were outside the map. I was not able to, but I was able to put together the different information, which is cute, and it was sort of fun and attractive. The only thing is it's, well, since I used it wrongheadedly, it really doesn't do much for a walking tour unless it's a virtual walking tour when you're imagining these places, which, I mean, that can be fun. But I put Oklahoma's first water flood. Well, sadly enough, the first water flood did not happen in Oklahoma City. Water flood, if you're unfamiliar with the oil industry, is something that's done in an old field to try to stimulate the production, to get the old oil that's just sitting there, not flowing, to get it to flow to the surface. So it's used, often there's a water flood injects water into the formation, into the reservoir, to sort of displace the fluid and push the oil up to the surface. And in a perfect world, it sounds like it would really work. In a not-so-perfect world, it sometimes works and it sometimes doesn't. But there have been some really, really large and successful water flood projects in Oklahoma, and I thought, well, I would like to include that. So in this case, in the case of learning objectives with schmaplets, I was thinking you could connect geography, culture, images, history, even some politics, relate to personal experience, discuss current events, and relate to contemporary issues. So you can do all those things. You can tell a story, etc. Now, those are very easy to use examples. Now, you may have some daring students who would like to go a lot further and create very kind of complex relational databases or to funnel and mash information together, kind of data mine or connect. Yahoo Pipes makes that possible. So I've created a place here to have Yahoo Pipes and just a screenshot so you can see what it looks like and how it's pretty much just a play space. I mean, a place where you can just construct and conceptualize. And there's also a pretty easy to follow example pipe, so there for functions is a nice tutorial. To be honest, it works pretty well, but I don't have a lot of patience for really creating complex things, so I usually like to just follow the lead, or I'll play with the basic ones. Popfly is a Microsoft product, and it's really, really cute. It works really well. It can be complicated and not complicated, but it has at its sort of fingertips so many nice databases that all you have to do is click and drag or copy. But I wanted to point out a few things. First of all, that the results are only as good as the data. So the data can be outdated, incomplete, and inaccurate. And I found that to be the case in many, many mashups that I've done. So I've had to step back and say, okay, where do I need to go for good information and how can I test it? Also, in this, let's think of multiple working hypotheses for the research question. And so let's think about, if we can look at this, what are the relationships, etc. And this is really interrogate the research question. What do you want the data to tell you? And will your methodology really yield what you want from your research question? So here are a couple of examples. I used these in these first two I used in a class that I was teaching on social inequality. It was called Human Arrangements. It's an interdisciplinary course. So one day we decided it would be useful to probe the connection between rural poverty and cultural isolation in the U.S. And we're making a lot of assumptions. So one of the assumptions is that we are socialized through Walmart so that we can basically be in any part of the United States, from rural Texas to rural Maine to Chicago, wherever. And if we go to Walmart, we're going to see pretty much the same thing. We're going to buy the same thing. So we will have a similar shared socialization experience through consumer culture, through consumerism. Cool, huh? So anyway, so we decided to see, okay, where are people isolated, and are they not able to participate in the Walmart socialization process? Are they missing out if they're in some isolated communities? So we decided to select low per capita income towns using census data. got the zip codes, then used Yahoo or Google Maps to see how many Walmart, Target, McDonald's, and Burger King restaurants, as well as big box stores, there might be. Now, how did this work out? My opinion, it was pretty interesting because, okay, first of all, the idea that low-income areas are typified by consumer culture isolation wasn't really supported in the way we expected. Okay, it's true, while low-income rural regions tended not to have the retail outlets mentioned above, like Walmart, there were magnet communities in the midst of low-income rural regions. And I know you're thinking, well, I knew that. What were you thinking? But, okay, it skewed the data, and so it made it really difficult. You almost had to figure out how far people were willing to drive to go to Walmart for their socialization experience, and you almost had to figure out, how often, the frequency. And then here's another thing that confused things. College towns tended to have low average income figures, but they tended to have lots of chain and big box stores, so that skewed the results. But we got to discuss all this. And we got to discuss the implications of that bottom line underlying assumption that Walmart provides a unifying socialization process in our culture. Okay, so now another thing we looked at, we mashed together data for young people, an emphasis on illegal and high-risk behaviors. So the well-being of young people can be related to their behavior and social environments, assumption one. Assumption two, mashed together data from various U.S. governmental agencies with an emphasis on illegal and high-risk behaviors will yield something. Okay, and then finally, we followed the research design and methodology recommended by the Federal Interagency Forum on Child and Family Statistics. So, we didn't have to be these gurus of statistics, which, I mean, I am definitely not. So, anyway, we looked at, first of all, the source, National Institutes of Health, National Institute of Drug Abuse, stats, looked at substance abuse, regular cigarette smoking, alcohol use, and illicit drug use, breakdown by grade and by reported ethnicity. That was data set one. Data set two went to Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, behavior, sexual intercourse, breakdown, 12th grade, 9th grade. That was chunk two of information. And then chunk three, source, National Crime Victimization Survey, behaviors, reported crimes involving juvenile offenders, breakdown, ages 12 to 17. So what this yielded was a sense of that there are certain clusters of behaviors, for example, smoking and alcohol abuse. We also could have looked at teenage pregnancies. And by seeing where those behaviors cluster, I mean the maladaptive bad behaviors, I mean like, well, crime, we could look at that and say that will have an impact on the future. So their well-being, not to mention, we could get a sense of the well-being now of these groups, and then also a sense of the well-being in the future, especially for the younger people who may be involved in some of the activities. They really need this is a good way to sort of pinpoint where intervention programs could occur, good way to predict too, sort of social malaise. So let's look briefly at where we could use mashups. In a blended course, very good. Face-to-face segment, we'll discuss the research problems in class. But step two, blended, hybrid, part online, part outside, in part face-to-face, we'll talk about what to do between classes, between face-to-face meetings, group and individual work outside class. And then step three, report results and discuss in class. Also could post, you could say also, I guess step four would be post. I'm adding this here. Forgive me. Post to discussion forum and make a lasting display. So it works really nicely, correct? Certainly does. Okay, so let's look down at 100% online courses. How can we use mashups there? Could be a little tricky because that's where you might get into a little bit of like fear factor. But ask students to pull together data from different sources as a part of the research process. So let's put sources, not courses. I'm glad I'm finding these typos. And then we encourage the sharing of the mashups and or the process in the discussion forum area. Include tutorials and links to popular mashup spaces and mashup techniques and uses. Cool, right? Mashups and mobile learning. You might think, well, how can we use a mashup in mobile learning? You'd be surprised. If you have a BlackBerry, chances are it has Go Yahoo on it, and taggable Flickr, Yahoo Maps, etc. If you have an iTouch or an iPhone, same thing. You can mash together YouTube and other Picasa, Flickr, etc. iTunes can also be mashed up with Instant Messenger, and you can share and post. So you can actually post to, say, your MySpace or Facebook. Finally, I have some videos. They may or may not be useful. And then I'm going to create a small little resource library for you to go to and peruse and enjoy. And in the meantime, I want to thank you very much for your patience, and thank you for listening.